corazón se queda aquí. Queda aquí. Esta es mi historia. Esta es.
Welcome to the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast. This podcast is hosted by the Emerging Historians. We are part of the Dallas Mexican American Historical Week, also known as DEMAL for short. DEMAL, founded in 2008, is a nonprofit focused on researching, collecting, documenting, and preserving Mexican American history in Dallas, Texas. On this season, we will share the lived experiences of BIPOC, meaning Black, Indigenous, and people of color business owners who have been affected by COVID-19 in Dallas, and we will also hear how they are navigating these times. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoy. Please like, subscribe, and share. My name is Victoria Farrell Ortiz, and today we have David Lozano. All right. Thank you so much, David, for joining us on the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast. If you wouldn't mind, just go ahead and give a blurb about who you are and what you do here in our city.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. My name is David Lozano. I am the Executive Artistic Director of Academia Theater Company. And we were founded as the first Chicano theater company in Dallas, and we've expanded our reach to tell stories about all Latinx people in the United States. And we also have youth programs in neighborhoods and in schools.
They're awesome. I was just looking at one of the Facebook posts that for your bi-national program, mm-hmm. A child made like embroidery on top of a photo, and I loved it. I thought it was really, really neat.
That's so, from Mexico, actually.
Okay, Mexico. So we're going to go ahead and start on a little bit about your upbringing and background. So would you mind telling listeners about where you grew up?
Sure. So I grew up in the Preston Hollow area on Wagoner Drive, and I went to Preston Hollow Elementary School. And then I... graduated from there in sixth grade, then went to Franklin Middle School. And then just, you know, like Jesse Tafaya, our board member, likes to joke, David grew up on the tough streets of North Dallas.
Yeah. No, Preston Hollow is cool. So what were your favorite activities to participate in as a child?
Actually, theater was something that I liked a lot. I didn't do a whole lot of it, but you know, I remember in second grade I was asked to be Frosty the Snowman, and so I, you know, danced and even sang and acted and performed. And so, you know, I was in plays. You know, I was really, my passion though was baseball.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was a fanatic baseball fan and baseball player, and I would play 7 months out of the year, winter ball as well as summer ball, and really any time. And then in middle school and high school, I played football till I had a bad injury on my hand. And then I played everything, but I was really only good at baseball and football. I was pretty good at basketball, but I didn't practice.
Wow, that's really neat, because I think sometimes people think that if you're into theater, maybe you won't be as inclined to sports and whatnot. So that's neat to see that you can do it all and enjoy it all.
Well, I actually think sports helps theater people quite a bit. You know, I was always in plays, like when I could be, but I wasn't like a theater kid, you know, mm-hmm. like I, you know, if I could be in a play instead of going to sports practice, I'd go to I'd try out for a play and see if I could get in it. And, But yeah, no, I think it's good as a director. When I meet actors who have been athletes, they have they have skill sets that that can really be help you uplift a production.
Hmm. I see. Yeah. Well, how would you say that you identify as, like, when it comes to race and ethnicity?
I have to admit, when we started using the term Latinx, I said that it will probably change again. So, you know, We grew up as a family calling ourselves Mexican, even though all of us were born here. And so that's just how I identified myself. And then, of course, I had Mexican American at times, but that's just not how we called ourselves at home. It seemed kind of more like on at school or something, when it seemed more like bureaucratic. And then when I joined Caramilla, I realized I was a Chicano. And so that's how I identified. And then of course, you know, you're looking into like, you know, as a theater maker and then working in the communities like this. And because we're bridging often like the Chicano experience with the Latin American experience and binding the experiences of Chicano, Latino American, pan Latino versus U.S. imperialism. So then it begins to make sense to identify, especially as a storyteller in theater, to begin identifying as Latino. So then I was identifying as Latino, but really as an individual, as Chicano. And then I started realizing these terms are tools for us for social political reasons. Because I'm more than just a Chicano or a Latino. And then Latinx arrived, and that's a way to even further broaden the community that we're embracing, and to then to actively embrace marginalized people within our Latino community. So Latinx is a very important term. But again, I think that once I started making that transition from Chicano to Latino and kind of going back, I realized that these are terms that we use as tools for social and political purposes. Mm-hmm. So it's fluid. I mean, I think we could start calling ourselves something else because it will be a tool for us.
Yeah. And like you said, it has changed. In college, I graduated from college in 2016, and so many of my professors in Mexican history would say Latinx. And so whenever I graduated, I was used to saying Latinx because that was the environment I had been in. But in conversations with people afterwards, you're like, Latinx, what is that? You're Hispanic or you're Mexican American. Like people get sometimes outraged about certain how you choose to identify as. And like you were saying, they are tools and they are like labels and subcategories, but being strategic about it is something that I hadn't necessarily thought about before. But you know, it's true. In certain contexts, it's important to think about how best to represent yourself and your people. So that's a neat point that you brought up.
Absolutely. Thanks.
How long have you been running Caramilla?
I joined Caramilla in 2002, and I was with the company until 2006. And then I left for a couple of years. And then I came back in 2009. And I've been here since.
So Caramilla was existing before you.
It was founded by Eliberto Gonzalez and Adelina Anthony. So Eliberto is a roofer by trade. He's from Port Isabel. He went to a Pan American University, which I think is now Rio Grande, Texas University, and so there he became a militant Chicano, and then he became a teacher, and then he moved to Dallas, married a journalist who was in love with theater, and they ended up seeing plays Tuesday through Sunday, and they would see them at junior colleges, community colleges, professional theaters, small theaters. And then he realized that there wasn't a theater that was about the Chicano experience. So he told his wife, I'd like to start a Chicano theater. And she said, you're crazy. And so he's like, but I need an artistic director, because he had no experience in the theater. But wanted to see it. So he ended up talking to, Aguilar, Ms. Aguilar, who was the general manager at the Bathhouse Cultural Center in 1985. And she said, who also identified as a Chicana, and she said, I know who you should talk to. And she introduced her to Adelina Anthony, and they founded Caramia in 1996.
Oh, wow. That's a backstory I knew nothing about. I just know you as the face of Caramia. So I was like, yeah, David. That's neat.
Yeah.
Could you speak a little bit about how Caramia and Teatro Dallas are planning on receiving a special residency here in Dallas, and how monumental that is?
Sure. I think that when we look at the way that the city of Dallas has historically supported arts groups, you're looking at a system that that has basically, you know, funded five organizations historically. So
yeah,
when, in the early 90s and 80s, someone would need to really look at the exact dates, but this is the general history. In the late 80s, early 90s, essentially what is now the Office of Arts and Culture funded five organizations. And only like 4% of the arts funding went to all other groups. So there was a movement that Sara Cardona, the current executive artistic director of Teatro Dallas, will call a cultural wars, in which people were really saying, well, it's time to support all of our groups, and especially the groups that we identify, that identified as minorities, and saying that minorities will soon be majority populations. So the funding started to change then, but the structure still stayed the same, which was, so for example, the Dallas Theater Center built their own building in 1959, let's say in the heart of Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in Jim Crow, you know, a black and brown theater company was not going to be able to thrive in the same way. There would not be the same sort of financial investment. So basically the theater center was able to accumulate wealth during Jim Crow when black and brown companies were deprived of wealth. So there's always a benefit to the deprivation of racism. There are beneficiaries of racism. And so that was the theater center. And so what started to happen is that in, like, I think 1974, the Dallas Theater Center said to the city, well, we're going to give you our building. And we can rent it from you for $1 a year. But we want to manage it. So they said, okay, well, so the idea is that you paid for it. And since you paid for it, you just pay us $1 so that there's a transaction and you can basically run it. But the city will cut the grass, fix the air conditioning, you know, do all of the maintenance. So the major arts institutions have set up those kinds of deals. So you don't have any, you don't have any resident arts group that has that kind of arrangement in Dallas that is Latino.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking at the scenario and we kept asking, okay, well, how can we, you know, even though we don't have that sort of accumulation of wealth because of historical racism.
Yeah. Generational wealth.
Yeah. Generational wealth, you know, so we don't have that as a community and as a Latinx arts community. So how can we set ourselves up to be a resident? And so it was about 12 months of negotiation, because what we ended up with is a 25-year residency for Teatro Dallas and Caramia Theater to have priority of dates and use of the theater, the two theaters, once the Black Box is built. But the first meeting, it was 5 years. And so, you know, we said, well, 5 years isn't suitable. That's not comparable to what, say, the Meyerson has. I think the Meyerson has a 100-year or 99-year residency contract.
Wow.
And so Councilman Omar Navarez pointed out when the Meyerson contract was being passed, he said, you know, can I ask why it's 99 years? Because that's a really long time. We're all going to be dead by So he brought up a point. He didn't push back on it. He voted for it, but he just pointed that out. Mm-hmm. You know, so we had to fight really hard to get 25 years, and it's a pretty good deal. We still have to raise money for it, you know, which I think people are frustrated about, especially during COVID, but during the pandemic. But that's where we're at, and I think it's a good place to be.
Okay, that's great. I'm really excited. I know that you guys worked really hard to make this happen, and so seeing some kind of equity come up and it be to the benefit of you at Caramia and Sarah at Teatro Dallas, it's pretty amazing. But I know that you guys really put in that work, and so it's something that you all strived for and worked hard towards getting done, because it wouldn't have done if you guys hadn't have asked for it, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So what do you think motivated you into becoming this like managing director? Were there any other thoughts of like another kind of career?
Well, it's going to sound really naive, but when I was 18 years old, I went to college and I changed my major as a freshman 3 times. And so I just decided I was going to college in California. I went to Santa Clara. It was expensive. I did have a scholarship, a nice size scholarship, but it was still expensive. You know, still have to get on a plane. You still have to pay a lot. So I just thought it was too much money without me knowing what I was doing. So I came back to town, to Dallas, and I just hung out, you know, for a while. I read and I hung out with my friends, and then I went to Richland College and I took an acting class. And, you know, I was so miserable with my life at that time. I said, why not? Let me jump right into it. And so I actually auditioned at theaters all over town, and the only one that called me was Teatro Dallas. So, and so ever since then, I just knew exactly what I wanted to do, which was direct a theater company and direct an ensemble and have youth programs. And I knew that early on. I could actually kind of see it coming when I had the position offered to me from Caramia. I've never thought about doing anything differently, but I would say that I've thought about doing different things recently. I don't know exactly what that would be, you know, because I kind of eat, drink, and breathe theater, but I also, you know, eat, drink, and breathe community. So, you know, so if I was to move in any direction, it would be to keep working with, you know, with our communities and participating in a movement for social change.
Yeah. Like, I really admire the BIPOC coalition that you all have created. You guys really organized and were cognizant of the moment that we're experiencing right now. Mm-hmm. And I just admire the work that you all are doing so, so much, because it's terribly needed, especially here in Dallas. It's so racist here, and so many of the systems that are present really need advocates to shine a light to them and then be thinking creatively about what's a better option here? What are things that we haven't thought of doing before? And I think I see that with even the LCC space in your residency there. But how long have you been making art then in Dallas?
Well, I was almost immediately once I was in the once I took my first acting class at Richland. Like I said, I was 20 years old. I really didn't have a whole lot of hopes, you know, invested in anything at that time. And so I just said, I really love this. I really love acting. And so I just dove in to as much as I could be a part of. Actually the International Theater Festival Teatro Dallas was one of the biggest influences on my life. So the first two festivals that I saw, I made sure I took all of the classes that were associated with them. I was meeting artists from around the world, and I still practice and utilize the techniques that I learned from those groups. And I've read books by the sources of those techniques. And so, I became a theater nerd, basically. And I saved money to go to San Francisco for a 6-week training when I was like 21. And so I've just always kind of consumed technique. And so I think by 2 years later, 3 years later, I was starting to create original work with friends here. And then very small, we were creating some original work, and then I started working professionally, I've been working professionally for 25 years, but like as a creator, not just acting other people's scripts, I would say 97, 98. So 22 years I've been creating my own material.
Wow. And do you mind me asking what you actually got your degree in college?
I have to think about it to remember. I'm joking. It's just that there was no, I went to UTD only because I wanted to work with one professor, but they don't have a theater department. And so I ended up having to choose a major, and I just chose the major of humanities. The course study for that is you build your own structure. And so you choose three out of multiple, tracks. And I chose history, performance, and I think literature. And so I don't even remember. And so, and I didn't have to do a thesis or anything. And so.
Very cool. Actually, I asked because, in hearing that, like, this wasn't just, at least in your college career, it wasn't something that was straightforward for you, and you might have, like, changed your major a couple of times. And so that's an experience that a lot of young people go through, especially now with our economy and thinking about what can I leave college with, like, all this debt and then getting a job. But I studied integrative studies, which sounds very similar to what you did. I picked three different focuses, and mine were sociology, public admin, and community service, and international studies. So I really love all of the stuff that you're talking about and appreciate this conversation. What theme would you say that or themes does your art address most typically?
That's a really good question. I wonder what are the variations of the themes that we address. It's not something I think about a lot. How about I just kind of talk about a couple of plays and see like where the track is, the trajectory is. I think that the signature play of my career, early on, was Crystal City 1969, which is the story of, are you familiar with the story?
I learned about it actually for the first time from Priscilla Rice.
Well, Priscilla was in the play. She was in the world premiere.
Oh, wow.
And she, and that's where I met her. So I had a friend, Raul Trevino, who came up to me and he said, "Hey, David, what do you think about this story? What if we wrote this play?" I actually wasn't with Katami at the time. I had left, and I was selling advertising to used car dealers, print advertising.
Sales.
So I said, "That's a phenomenal story." And he said, "The people live here in Dallas that were part of the story." It's like, it's even better. So what the story, and so we took the story to Katami's board, and they said, "We love it." And they said, "Well, this will probably be the last production of Katamiya. And we'll close down afterwards because we don't have any money left." And then, so we produced the show, and it was the highest, grossing play in the company's history. And so it became an impetus to keep going. So it's a great story. So that here we are now. But it's a story in South Texas in a farm town in which 70% of the population was Mexican and Chicano, and 30% was white. But high school students were in any school, couldn't speak Spanish on campus, couldn't eat Mexican food, could not play on the starting varsity teams, and only one Mexican girl was allowed to be a cheerleader. So they had staged a walkout. And during the walkout, the parents were inspired to run for office. So they ran for office and ran the table on all of the local elections. And so they took over the town.
Flipped it.
And required Spanish reading, writing, and speaking in Spanish from kindergarten all the way to 12th grade. And so, and so that's where the Chicano militant Chicano movement began. We say militant just because it doesn't mean armed. Mm-hmm. You know, militant just means, you know,
organized or
organized and outspoken. And so, that's really the play I think kind of defined my career in many ways, because when I started organizing, the play was actually my script, because the way they organized was, it was a matter of confrontational politics, and you also utilize your community contacts, but also the media, and you also use different kinds of media. I think we're in a different era now, and so I think that it's a really interesting space to be, because I think that that era of confrontational politics is it's important if for us to kind of pull back on that and actually be more fluid and more expansive, because I think for one, it's dangerous, and then two, I think that you want multiple leaders and not one. So when you're public and you're confrontational, typically it's a few people, mm-hmm. you know, but if you pull back and you really work through numbers, then they can't, it's whack-a-mole. They can't figure out who the leader is. And mm-hmm. It also, and so I think that that's kind of where we're moving to. And I think it's so right. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's really kind of defined my career. And I would say that in general, from then I realized that our work is how do we liberate the stories of all marginalized people, you know, within our and even outside of our Latinx communities, mm-hmm. and creating connections outside of the Latinx communities, and so I think it's really giving voice, because, you know, when one speaks, that's action, and that's political. And so, I think, again, I think Crystal City was kind of a good, like, milestone, but the work has really been, I think, you know, how are we uplifting more voices? And early on, I was a very, very central figure and the primary director. Right now we have multiple directors and multiple writers. And so I just think that it's, you know, I don't know, pluralistic sounds kind of a bureaucratic term, but maybe that's kind of the direction we're in right now. Does that answer your question?
I think so. It's like a collective, and those themes are really helping spread the point of view and perspective of minorities or people that are, experience racism or any kind of discrimination. So yeah, I think it does.
Or feeling like your voice is not heard. You know, I think that, so for example, we did a piece about homeless LGBTQ youth. Mm-hmm. And so a trans male was, was performing in a trans male role, and just the act of them telling their story and sharing their struggles on stage in a really beautiful and powerful and difficult piece of theater was really a first, I think, at the Latino Cultural Center, and for our city at that, you know, and it really hit us as a staff that is action. that is activism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the process is craft, but the activism is the presence.
Yeah.
Of that experience. And so I think that that's what we're doing, is we're uplifting the multiple voices of our communities, so that they can have, and we can have active voices in our culture, in our world.
Mm-hmm.
I
watched that play, and I really appreciated how there were little pamphlets on each table that were offering resources to youths that might have been in that same situation as the main character. And I was just like, how great to have something that's so timely and really an issue that so many youths are facing in our city, but then also have a response device to it. You know, like, if you need help, here's some resources, or if you're wanting to help people who experience these circumstances, then this is where you should go to and volunteer your time or make a donation. And it's like you're sharing the spotlight, you know, like you're bringing attention to these issues and this point of view, but also allowing awareness to go to the other places that prioritize and are experts in, like, homelessness and LGBTQ issues. So I really liked and enjoyed that, and I love that play. I cried. It was hard to watch in some parts, but I thought it was really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. So what are some of the challenges you faced as a business owner and an artist? Because sometimes the way that people's minds work are that they don't really see art as a business, but it truly is. And if you look at how much money the art community brings into the city of Dallas, it's huge, and, like, artists deserve that recognition. So as a business owner and artist, what are some of the challenges that you've faced?
Well, just to clarify, I'm not a business owner.
Mm-hmm.
So I work for a board. So we're it's gotta be a theater. It's a nonprofit. And so we have a board, and I technically work for the board. So, okay. And I am accountable.
Thank you for clarifying.
Sure. So, but I mean, that's common with, I think, corporations as well, that they have a board, primarily shareholders, you know, if you're talking about a big corporation, and the CEO answers to them. So that's our situation. I think, I think about this a lot, you know, because, I'm the director of a business, you know, but I'm also an activist. I think that those two things are becoming more and more tightly wound. And I think that makes, I think, our work more challenging, because what I'm doing is I'm consistently challenging the practices of not just, you know, the city of Dallas as an institution, but also the city of Dallas as a body of people, and as with cultural and societal practices. And so it's I would say there are a lot of challenges there, but I actually think that that's where our greatest strides have come from. I get a sense that so it seems to make a lot of enemies for me. Mm-hmm. On one hand, and enemies may be too strong of a word, but, you know, in some cases I don't think that's too strong of a word, but I think in many ways, I think people are very appreciative that, you know, someone like myself or the people in our organization, not just the people, our organization, as well as our partners, are very active in this movement, because we're provoking new ways of thinking that also makes sense. You know, primarily we spend a lot of time working on anti-racism in the arts, and which deals with the history of racism in Dallas. And a lot of these are just common sense issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, But so many people are able to sense that. So I think that the challenge, though, is that as a nonprofit, we're trying to raise money with people who are accustomed to the philanthropic giving that has benefited historically white artists and white organizations. Mm-hmm. And that dynamic has not changed. Again, you talk about if we talk about the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture, if 14% of COP funds, you know, for large arts institutions is all that goes to groups of color, mm-hmm. when 60% of our city is black and brown, mm-hmm. That is certainly not racially equitable. Now, the private philanthropic company is giving even less, I bet, if we had a study. In Houston, mm-hmm. 1% of all money from foundations was going to fund Latinx arts groups. 1%, that was a study done by NALAC. So, mm-hmm. so those are the challenges. And so we're at a privileged time because I can speak up at a time in which I would hope that there is not any retribution against me because of the narrative on equity. But even though we're talking about equity, does not mean that we're practicing it. So I think that in general, racial equity does not exist in policy or practice in the City of Dallas. And being a spokesperson for that creates a lot of obstacles as well as some benefits. I'm happy with the progress we're making because it's progress bit by bit. Mm-hmm. But I think for us to sustain this movement, as I was saying earlier, it's going to require a multi-headed coalition.
Could you share your social media handles, please?
So you can see Academy of Theater at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, mm-hmm. by looking up at Academy of Theater.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, David, and your perspective, the work that you're doing, your leadership, and all the things that Academia is doing, School of Yes, the mental health. Everything is just wonderful, and I'm so excited to see what you all with the BIPOC coalition are able to do in the next coming years. I think you guys are really that grassroots organization and collective that the City of Dallas arts community was terribly needing in these times.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you for your leadership, and thank you for being part of DMAL and interviewing me. You know, DMAL's a very important organization in Dallas. And I'm honored to be interviewed for their podcast.
Thank you. We appreciate your time so much.
All right. Thank you, Victoria.
Okay. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode was hosted by Victoria Farrell-Ortiz. Intro and outro composers/singers were Veronica Valera, she is a composer and vocals, Andrew Jackson, trumpet and sound editor, Autumn Graves, composer, guitar, and lead vocals. The sound editor for this episode was myself, Victoria. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends, family, the elotero, everybody. Only you can prevent your history from being forgotten. That is on you. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at DMAHL Official, that's DMAHL Official, and like us on Facebook, leave a review, and stay safe out there. Hasta pronto. Pueden intentar robar mi casa, mi cultura y la bajada. Pero...